Whether you are moved by Miles Davis's album, Kind of Blue, Kehinde Wiley's portrait of President Obama, or Hamilton the musical by Lin-Manuel Miranda, you will probably agree that all three are works of great creativity. The creative imagination is what makes possible new ideas, great works of art and literature, even new discoveries in science and math. Human beings have wondered about the source of this inspiration of creativity for millennia. The ancient Greeks worshipped nine goddesses known as the Nine Muses, each a source and giver of a different kind of knowledge. In Norse mythology, it is the goddess Freya who bestows knowledge upon women shamans. And in the Hebrew scriptures, God fills Ha-Adam, or Adam, with divine breath, a word that has the same root as the words for spirit and inspiration. But ask any painter or composer, inventor, or even preacher, and they will tell you, inspiration, the muse, whatever name they use for this creative spark, it is rarely something summoned at will. It is elusive. It can be fickle. It can be rare. It's not transactional. It's not like you can do something and depend that it's going to come for you right after that. It's more complicated than that. Sometimes it strikes without warning, at inconvenient times, even waking us up in the middle of the night. This is why artists of all kinds talk about creativity as a process, about the importance of creating the conditions for the creative spark to ignite, for the muse to appear. Have you ever gotten stuck when trying to write a paper or a poem or figure out a problem? What have you done when that happens? What helps you get unstuck? It doesn't always work for me, but often when I'm feeling stumped, I'll stop working for a while and go take a walk. Or I'll go do a load of laundry or start some bread dough so it can rise in time for dinner. Anything to take my mind off my project. Sometimes I'll even wait to start work on my project again until I've been able to sleep on it. However we do it, interrupting our thought process so we can open our minds and hearts up to things beyond what we've been able to conceive of so far, that, I think, is one of the conditions for the creative spark to ignite. As Dr. Rideout puts it in our reading today, God is waiting in the space between our fingers that might connect. He is waiting for us to stop naming her. She is waiting for us to see all of him. God is waiting to be unshrunk. Another way to think about this way of inviting the creative spark to ignite is being willing to leave some empty space, to resist the temptation to begin writing ideas on the page or sketching something on the canvas or even humming the beginnings of a melody so that we can be open to the infinite possibilities that exist out there and in here. As founder and former CEO of the Visa Credit Card Association, D. Hock, has said, make an empty space in any corner of your mind and creativity will instantly fill it. Doesn't quite work that way for me. But ancient Jewish teachers even imagined that God's very first creative act was one of making space. Because if at the beginning of time only God existed, God would have had to constrict the divine self to make space to put creation. My understanding of the Big Bang, too, is that the material in what was once the very small universe first constricted onto itself before it exploded out beginning the many processes that led to each of us being here. Beginning this past fall, the board asked us, your ministers, to lead you in a mission and vision process, to re-engage with our sense of purpose and priority as a congregation here and now. And rather than try to cram all of that into one long weekend of workshops, we designed it to unfold over several months, leaving lots and lots of space and time for the creative spark to ignite all of our hearts and minds. And out of that spacious process, this community came up with three priorities: financial sustainability for our congregation, getting to know one another better and connecting with one another across our many differences, and being a place that the wider community knows will be there for them in times of need. With these three priorities as a mandate, your board wrote new ends, a fancy word for goals, to help focus the ministry and fellowship and service that we do together here over the next 5 years. These ends are phrased as if we have already accomplished them because they're meant to be preferred outcomes, a vision of what we are called to become together. Here are the ends that your board has adopted. The Unitarian Universalist Church of Berkeley is a vibrant, multicultural, anti-racist, anti-oppressive congregation. We embody and share Unitarian Universalism. Our communities experience us as an active and dynamic partner in pursuing societal and environmental justice. People rely on us in times of need. We invite people of goodwill to make a spiritual home with us. We celebrate the diversity of our congregation in the fullness of who we are. We reach out to one another across differences to connect in shared purpose. We have fun. We are generous with our time, our talent, and our treasure. We steward our financial resources responsibly. We are comfortable, open, and transparent in discussing both personal and congregational financial matters. These are exciting ends, and they form a powerful vision of who and what we are working to do and become in the next 5 years. But even though they are called ends, in truth, they are really just a beginning. They are only the broadest of broad strokes on an otherwise blank canvas that is waiting for all of you to fill it in with color and texture and meaning and life. The ends are just the beginning because, as Reverend Christian and I have preached before, we are in the midst of a social, political, and religious reformation. Our government is growing more authoritarian. Undocumented children are being separated from their parents once they cross our country's southern border and housed in what can only truthfully be called internment camps. The rule of law is losing meaning. Political parties are shifting their values, often in ways that ignore people with little or no privilege. Shopping malls and bookstores are closing as more people choose to do their shopping online. Housing prices are skyrocketing, and the social safety net is shrinking. So as the world around us changes, it should be no surprise that churches are having to make changes of their own as well. This congregation is not as large as it once was. Your last settled minister served two full-time positions, whereas we serve one full-time position together. Our building requires significant resources to fix and then maintain over the long term. We have an accumulated deficit that we need to decide how to address. Over the last several years, this congregation has made a number of changes to begin responding to these challenges. Some of them have been easier than others. But it's change that makes the greatest transformations possible. And as the Reverend Sophia Betancourt preached yesterday at the ordination of our intern minister, the Reverend Amanda Weatherspoon, change is that the face of the monarchy in England is growing more diverse. Transformation is when there will be no monarchy at all. I've heard stories about what this congregation used to be like decades ago. How it wasn't such a welcoming place for people who weren't straight and cisgender. But through hard work and a commitment to changing this culture, this congregation was able to broaden its welcome, widen its circle, live more fully into the best parts of who we have always been. And all these years later, that's just what we're called to do again. Yes, we've got some work to do. We've got some challenges, financial, cultural, spiritual. But rather than try to polish these away, rather than try to ignore or postpone dealing with them, what if we choose to do as the diamond carver did in today's story? What if we choose to approach our challenges as opportunities? What if these challenges are a chance for us to begin to shape the emerging beauty of our always changing and fluctuating congregation? What if we began to relate to our changes not as scratches and flaws to obliterate, to gloss over, but a chance to live more fully into our reason for existing as a religious community in new ways? It won't be easy. But then nothing truly wonderful, truly beautiful, and life-giving and sustaining is ever easy. It will mean we have to make some space in our hearts and our minds for something new to take root. It will mean we have to work at creating the conditions for that creative spark to set us all aflame. It will mean remembering that we are more and we are better together, and that our ends, our goals, are just the beginning, just the broadest of broad strokes on a canvas that is our shared ministry in this world. And it will mean trusting the source of our inspiration, this spark of creativity over which we have no control and yet to which we are dependent. It will mean trusting that to help us create and live into something we can't even imagine yet today. It was so many times for those who came before us in Berkeley and when they moved up the hill here in Kensington. And may it be so for us. And may it be so for our children's children in this beloved congregation. Amen.